speech over my stand-up. So,
conceptually,
I can show you later. It doesn't matter.
Conceptually, I'm on board for that.
It's pretty. It's, you know what?
Do you want this, or I'm gonna put it away?
Oh,
eat it because it's gonna get knocked off by the cord. Okay, jeez.
Just throw it.
Dead Room Comedy. Dead Room. Dead Room Comedy. Comedy.
Hey, happy birthday, man. I'm glad we're doing this.
Oh, thanks. It's on Friday.
Your birthday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just saying that to be wrong on purpose, and it turns out it's pretty close. That's perfect.
No, Elliot just wanted to be first.
Oh, to tell me.
Yeah, happy birthday next year.
Late. Late. People have been telling me happy birthday all the way up until 2062.
Oh, yeah, you idiot. People have been telling me happy birthday since I was born. You fucking missed it, dude. Have you done one of these yet?
This solo?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff and I did one, months ago. So.
Back when you guys were...
friends.
Before you guys broke up. How did that go, structurally? Do we want to do the same thing? I didn't listen or watch it.
It was fun. We basically had five questions for each other, but I didn't prepare any questions for this one.
For today? Okay. I can think of five questions for sure.
Yeah. Do you want me to start?
Yeah. Did you didn't prepare anything for this? I prepared a little bit. I thought of like some things I'd want to talk to you about and some things I'd want to do on the podcast.
Okay. Do you want to do a rundown of that?
That I have prepared. I was just thinking I want to talk a little bit about our comedy history together and then just kind of gas each other up from some of my early memories of you doing comedy. Cause we go way back in comedy, and
that's true.
I started thinking about those knowing we were doing this. So that's what I want to talk about, but we can do it.
However,
you want to do it.
I like that as a beginning point. Do you remember, I sent you that video a couple of weeks ago about, it was like a couple of months ago, and it was you getting gassed up on the Greenlight Weekend podcast.
Yeah. That was really good for my mental health. So I thought we could record this. Yeah,
we could just play that on repeat.
Yeah. Or
just me gassing you up.
Yeah. I wanted to have a situation again where I was getting gassed up by someone and then you could just keep sending it to me every couple months to build my confidence.
Yeah. I'll just have
back
it
up.
Saved and I can just, email it to you.
Yeah. When I look sad.
Yeah, exactly.
When I seem sad. Do you have the van you bought, by the way?
Yep.
Is it at your parents' house?
Yeah. I'm taking it in tomorrow to the mechanic. At like 7 a.m. to get the intake manifold gasket replaced and the rear vent hose is seeping oil.
Yeah. Rear vent hose. Yeah.
Yeah. I pretty much just go off the mechanics.
Van life. You're just going to start saying stuff like that a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be like, you don't even know what a fucking rear mechanical vent hose is.
Yeah, pretty cool. You guys have a mailbox. You guys don't even have to deal with your internal gasket combustion.
Yeah, it's really nice that you guys are grinding on that 9 to 5. I'm more just living in the moment.
Just grinding gears.
By the way, does anyone have a steering wheel I could borrow? Mine got stolen in Kansas.
Yeah. By the way, does somebody have jumper cables? Because I'm masturbating.
So my Wi-Fi went out. Can I see it before you go?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have a couple of things I have to do. I have to replace the door lock because it's being held in by a bike lock right now.
Okay.
But I got a good deal and I factored all of those in, and I'm going to get it fixed probably over the summer.
Factored in the, no locks. You're like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Should be about $600 less because of the bike lock. Well, how good's the bike lock?
It's a pretty good bike lock.
Okay.
He left a lot of stuff. He left a NutriBullet, like a clean...
Like a blender?
A blender, TV.
I don't know if that's the kind of thing you want secondhand.
Oh, a NutriBullet?
No, a TV. Gross.
Ew.
Ooh, I bet he watched Toy Story on here. Yeah. Perv.
I'm excited.
Yeah, can I sleep in it?
Yeah, if you just want. Like, dude, there's two beds. One, the couch folds out into a bed.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long is it? Is it like a 16-foot van or shorter than that?
It's like a... 16-foot is like a standard van size, right?
No, that's a pretty big van, I think.
Oh. I think it's a little shorter than that. It's probably 14 feet.
14, 12?
It's a Ford Econoline 2008.
Okay. What's the serial number?
What's the VIN?
What's the VIN?
Just the VIN.
Yeah. When you said Nutribullet, it reminded me. I thought about getting you a gift. I'm treating this kind of like our parting conversation.
Right, right. Because we're probably not going to talk.
Until you go. So I thought that's why I wanted it to be like a little bit sentimental and stuff. And I thought about getting you a gift.
Okay.
And then when you said Nutribullet, I was like, oh, shoot, somebody already got him bullets. Because I was gonna get you bullets.
Oh, like a 9mm bullets?
Yeah, I was just going to get you bullets for your gun.
Oh, that would be sweet.
That's nice. That's nice. That's thoughtful. And also makes me kind of like, you know, aiding and abetting if you do anything.
I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah, but that's what a lot of people say before they do stuff.
Yeah, that's like my whole reason that I got a van was just
I'm not going to do anything. Yeah, you're going to keep the gun in the van, right? Like that makes...
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, well, yeah, what do you think the passenger seat's for?
It has the van... I don't want to talk about this on the... Whatever.
You don't want to talk about the van just the whole
specifics
time?
Of like, you know...
The layout of the van and where you keep the weapons inside of it?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Why not? I was curious. You pulled it up.
Yeah, Evan pulled it up. Where's the gun safe? It has a gun safe in it.
Does it really?
It does. And it's very secure and it's like locked into place, which is perfect. I mean, it's a small safe. It's not meant for guns.
Right, yeah.
I can put a handgun in
it. Well, any gun's a gun safe if you put a gun in it. That's a crib. No, it's a gun safe because I put a bunch of guns in it.
Gun in a piggy bank.
That's actually a gun crib.
It's a gun piggy bank. Yeah, it's a Ford Econoline 2008 E150.
Windows on the side or no?
No windows. The side.
Good. Yeah, you don't want people to be able to see inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Or for you to see out either.
Yeah. It's going to be like a portable masturbation pod. I'm going to be able to jerk off
it does look
anywhere.
Masturbation
it looks like
safe.
People come in them.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude. It fucking...
Just drive your car.
Even if I have like a bad set somewhere in like fucking Fargo, North Dakota, it doesn't matter because I can just beat off in the parking lot right in front of where I bombed.
Yeah.
I've already thought this through.
Yeah. It'll be so nice to masturbate really close to where I perform.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I do that now, but people get mad.
Yeah.
Just planting seeds.
That's really cool. I think I want to, before you go, you should give us like a tour.
Definitely. I'm going to be using it too. Like over the summer, I'm going to go camping and, you know, sleep in it and shit like that. Do a little test run.
Very cool.
Start sleeping in Walmart parking lots.
Just to practice?
Masturbating
in parking lots? You want to get good at it before you
I do.
You
want to
master it.
I know I've asked you this, but what's your departure date? Just end of July?
It's like August 1st. Well, probably like August 3rd, but... Right.
Sometime after July is when you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Which seems like a while, but it's not.
No, not at all. I mean, time's been flying by. But yeah, I need to start. Hopefully, like my goal is to start reaching out to people like now and then at least have like a couple of shows lined up in the following months, you know?
Right.
Like I think I was thinking about going through Nebraska and Kansas City first because I know Ali and Ryan Tricky, mm-hmm. and they said they could give me shows and stuff. But I also want to go up to like South Dakota, North Dakota and shit. And I don't.
There's a really good show in North Dakota.
Oh, really?
That I went to with Sarah. I just happened to be there visiting her at school.
Okay.
And we saw a poster at a coffee shop for a comedy show. And it was DIY, but it was like Sam Talent's headlined it. He was on the previous posters. And the guy that headlined it had a late night spot, but it's the only comedy in North Dakota. There's no club. It's just the
DIY.
Yeah. It reminds me of like Laugh Therapy where it's really well done. It's like downstairs basement of a bar. They turn it into a comedy club for the night, but there's no like full-time comedy club there. Hmm. So
that's in Fargo.
Yeah. So
okay. I'll hit Sarah up.
You're welcome. Yeah. I bet if you Google, Fargo comedy, that's what comes up.
There's a one search result in all of Google.
Or go to every coffee shop and look at every flyer.
I could.
I could tell you the name of the coffee shop because there was a comedy open mic at the coffee shop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I almost got on the show too. I asked the guy and he was like, I would, but we're full. So that's like.
Yeah, but I'm going to be living in a van. So I'm going to.
Right.
It's like balls to
the ball. Well, if you just hit him up in advance. I asked him 20 minutes before the show started.
Right.
I got there and I was like, hey, I'm a comic from Denver. Can I do five? And he was like,
no. He was like, please get out of my face.
Yeah, but I'm sure if you, if I had asked it sooner, I think he probably would have been like, seen my talent and potential and put me on.
Yeah, exactly. If you had sent him a tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been doing comedy for a long time. I remember, obviously, the first time I saw you was in Laugh Therapy.
That was the first time you saw me?
Yeah, perform.
Okay. At the open mic?
Yeah.
And that was your first set, too?
Yeah, well, you had been doing it for a couple of months before I started.
And okay.
That was my first set.
Okay, so I was there for your first set.
Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah.
Love that. Did you start the same? Remember Jay?
Jay who?
Oh.
Oh, was he a very skinny kind of nature-y guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he,
what? In Durango?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah. You guys like started about the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy because he had way more success than me.
Just immediately.
Immediately.
But, yeah, but then he, what does he do now? He's probably like got a job and kids and stuff.
Yeah, he's probably happy.
Yeah.
He's
an like, idiot.
He's giving it up.
Yeah.
But I'm better than him at comedy now.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, you were pretty early, but he got on a lot of shows.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things I was going to gas you up. I remember the first time you did the showcase at Laugh Therapy. I was in the audience and I was watching the show and writing down notes about everyone performing just to kind of be a dick and also to like help my friends write and to learn for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've told you this too. The only thing I wrote down about your set, I was like, Jacob, let's move to Denver and be famous.
Oh,
do you remember? Do you remember telling me that?
Yeah.
So that's me gassing you up because you crushed. You got it.
Thanks, man.
Phenomenal 5-minute set at Laugh Therapy a couple months into comedy where it's pretty much impossible to bomb.
Yeah, that is true.
And you just have to string a couple sentences together and have some sort of cadence to what you're saying. But
and people just eat it up.
Changed. And then you moved and then you went to Spain instead.
Yeah.
Selfish.
Yeah, that is. I did miss out on a year of comedy for that.
How long were you into comedy before you went to Spain?
I was doing it for like maybe 9 months before I went to Spain. And I remember that I went to Spain and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to finish my Spanish degree and I'm going to move to South America. Like I wasn't planning on doing comedy.
Yeah.
Even after 9 months. And that was still my plan when I moved back.
I remember that. It was disappointing. And like the other people in the scene were like, oh, too bad Jacob's gonna have a real life like Jay.
And then I was like, psych.
Then you had a nose ring and you're like, I guess I can't get a job now.
Yeah, exactly. But no, like I don't even remember when I made the decision, but I remember it was like early, like maybe 1 month or 2 months into doing comedy and doing it consistently and having a lot of fun. I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna fucking move to Denver and not.
Yeah, you made that decision in Durango.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Because when you came back originally, you came back from Spain and you lived in Denver with your parents for like a little bit of that summer, right?
Yeah. I mean, because I didn't have an apartment.
Yeah. Until school started. So you had time between your study abroad and you didn't do any comedy in Denver then?
No. Okay. I was just trying to remember. I don't think I did. Yeah. Okay. The first comedy that I did was back in Durango.
Okay. But then like summers, you and I would both do this. We would like come home for the summers or like visit our parents from Durango.
Yeah.
And do comedy in Denver and Fort Collins while we were up here.
Yeah, Josh like stayed at my parents' house for like a couple of weeks or a month when we were both finding apartments. And so we would go to Mike's like every day.
Yeah, this is like 2019 now, right? Before you guys.
After we graduated. I think you were still in Durango.
I stayed that summer. You guys moved right after your graduation.
Right.
Like May.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I stayed through that summer.
Yeah.
In Durango, and it was lonelier.
Yeah, that's like being the old guy at the high school football games.
Yeah, yeah. Just and I was doing that, too.
He was doing both of those
I was
things.
Going to Fort Lewis events, like college college parties. Like, what's up? I graduated.
Yeah, you were like, what's up, youngster? You're giving kids nuggies.
Yeah. What's up, little fella? I'm kind of a veteran now.
It's only been like 2 months, and people are like, who's the old guy?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks. That's when my beard came in for the first time all of a sudden. There's no beard till then.
No, Durango was like the opposite of that, because Durango was like, there'd be people who were like 45 years graduated from Fort Lewis, and they would just be at the parties.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Just like old people.
We don't have to say their names, Ryan, but he was like... but he's like young. He's on the younger side of that spectrum.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't... You wanted to stay in Durango.
Yeah. I did. I think I still think that a lot of times.
You want to go back?
I think I could be really successful as a comedian in Durango, maybe more so than Denver. That's been like hashed out so many times in our group. Me saying that, I think for the first time in a long time, maybe like first time ever in my time in Denver, I feel the same about the comedy scene here as I felt about the comedy scene in Durango. It just took 2.5 years to get there. Where like now I feel like I have friends, I have community, I'm accepted. Right. People are excited to see me, it seems like.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm hanging out with my friends. That's what I missed about Durango.
Right.
That was the Durango. I went to your Laugh Therapy show. I saw my friends on the show. There were 12 comedians total in the scene. And I sat down and wrote notes for you guys during your sets, during the show, and for myself to get better. And then I talked to you guys about it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That was dope.
That's what the scene was for a while. And you come to Denver and everyone's like,
yeah.
wow, this guy eats a lot of paint or something. You know, they're looking at you like you're a psycho.
Yeah, well, it's very cutthroat. It's very hard. If we're talking about gassing up, I remember...
oh, yeah. Let's get to this. Will you bookmark this for me? Just let me know what minute we're at.
Yeah. Cool. I remember, I think it was right after we graduated, maybe the summer, maybe earlier, but it was 2019, and it was when you were doing your album recording. Mm. And I remember, like, Josh and I opened, I think, or somebody else. Or
it was
I
you
opened.
And Kate. I didn't put Josh on the show.
why is that?
I had to make cuts somewhere, brother. That's literally how Durango was, though. It's like, if you didn't stop after two, everyone had to do it. That's why, like, the straighter got so out of hand, where it was like...
Oh, my God, bro.
You know what I mean? There's so few comedians that you're like, well, I guess everyone just do the show.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember, you know, Josh and I were eating at like Irish Embassy or whatever. And then you rolled up on your bike and you were shirtless. And you were like, yeah, I'm just passing out all these flyers. And you have like flyers and
I was doing posters. I was doing it shirtless.
And yeah, I'm almost positive you were, because you were like biking all around town and shit.
That's dope. That's so cool that I was shirtless.
It's going such up. A small detail that Jacob couldn't make up.
I really couldn't.
The thing is, like, it's unbelievable to me because I think I've just matured.
Yeah, that was pretty...
It's 100% believable to me that I did that, but I could not see myself doing that now. Not the passing out flyers, just the fact that I was doing it on my shirtless. Bike shirtless. Like, yeah. I was just such a jockey prick in high school and college where I was just like, what's up? Hey, you, stranger, comedy show, it's me, the guy with the body, headlining. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was... It wasn't the act of you being shirtless or passing it out. It was... the entire organization of your showcase and your album recording is that you promoted it for like months. You got everyone that you knew in Durango to the Steaming Bean. You organized it. You passed out flyers. You barked. And it was when I saw that, I was like, holy shit, he's so organized. And he's, you know, like, he's just like, it's like a multifaceted comedian that's really good at marketing himself.
Thank you. Yeah, dude, that's interesting. That leads me into, I thought of something.
that leads me into me talking about how dope I am.
Yeah, it really does. No, thank you. I appreciate that. I remember with that project, like, there were doubts, you know, it's scary. Like, I'm going to do an album recording. I'm going to pay, this is all out of my pocket.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay money to get this professionally done. And like, there was definitely self-doubts and you feel like a fraud. You're like new to comedy-ish, three years in or something.
Yeah.
I just kind of would have those doubts and just be like, oh, I just can't let this fail. So like, what can I do right now so this doesn't fail? Mm-hmm. Oh, I can go pass out flyers to strangers to get more people to the show so it goes better. It's like something so simple. There was.
You're saying that when you had an anxious thought, you were like, you counteracted it with...
I just can't I can't let this fail.
Right.
I can't. I'll be too, like, it was partially the embarrassment, partially the financial aspect of it, and partially like the mental repercussions of failing at that. Imagine just being like four people show up and you're like,
it takes a lot of confidence and it is a big leap. You know, you do have to, when you start promoting it, like before you know if anyone has bought tickets or anything or will buy tickets, that's a big confident leap that you have to take where you're like, I'm good enough to make this not absolutely unbearably cringeworthy.
Yeah, and then you have to do whatever it takes to make sure that it doesn't fail.
Right.
Which is like, you know, there weren't a ton of people there even after I did that, but it was like I was starting to get a read for how many people were going to come and knew like I got to do stuff to get people into this show, like anything I can. So it was like asking friends, taking advantage of any resources I had, like promoted at Fort Lewis, trying to get people there from the college there, trying to get strangers on the street there, and just keep doing stuff, and you won't fail.
Yeah,
is what I learned in that instance. But on the way here, I thought of something interesting, and it's partially like my sales job and being in the corporate world now. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time thinking about how to be successful from a business perspective, and it's like I'm getting coached on that and stuff, right? By my company and by, gonna burp. Hold on.
Who's your company again? What's your name?
Yeah, we haven't never said on the podcast, so for good reason too. No, I don't think I've said anything on here that would get me fired.
Lockheed Martin.
Yeah,
who you're working for?
No, but they're. I had a conversation with my like leadership sales team, and we talked about the importance of action. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have a goal you want to achieve something, start acting on it.
Yeah.
And what I've done this before, and it made me. think of this from a comedy perspective. Have you ever traced back like your comedy life to like a couple, just work backwards from your comedy where you are now,
mm-hmm.
go through like your joke book and look, I always write down the venue I'm performing at
yeah.
in my joke book. I write the date and the venue, go back through those and think about how did I get here? Oh, because I was here because I was, and you can like work your way back. And
oh,
I,
interesting.
So I got to stop burping. I shouldn't have chugged that first beer. So I did, do you remember when I did the Flagstaff Comedy Festival?
Yeah.
The first time?
Were you booked on a show?
No.
You just did the open mic?
Yeah. So there was a, this is where I'm saying like, if you want to achieve something, just start acting on it. Mm-hmm. So I was 9 months into comedy, wanted to be a comedian. There was a comedy festival, six-ish hours, is that yeah. right, to Flagstaff from Durango that I knew was happening, but I was not booked on.
Right.
But I just drove to the festival. And yeah. I was like, I'm going to see if I can get on shows. I'm going to meet comedians. I'm going to hang out all out of my own pocket. Took the weekend off work.
Yeah.
Missed a couple days of school. Just ditched class.
Yeah.
And at that festival, I met someone named Gene Moore, Phoenix comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so this is me like tracing it back to that event. So I went to that festival. I got onto the festival. They had open mics there. And then I got onto showcases
mm-hmm.
at the festival. But more importantly, I met comedians that were nice to me and willing to give me opportunities.
Yeah.
And then the first comedy festival that Jill did, it wasn't the Four Corners Comedy Festival at the time, I don't think.
Oh, it was the one when I was gone over the summer.
It was in Cortez. It was at the Sunflower Theater.
Uh-huh.
Just, it was only two shows, the whole
yeah.
festival.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
she brought people from Phoenix and all over the place. She brought those guys from that festival to that show. I wasn't on that festival either, but I went and I saw them again.
Uh-huh.
And then I met them the next time they were in Durango. And then they invited me to come to Phoenix, and I went to Phoenix, and I got my first spot ever at a comedy club
mm-hmm.
at the House of Comedy in Phoenix through Gene Moore, who I met by going to that festival for the first time and right. working my way on it.
Yeah.
And then I did my tour before the album where I got to go through Phoenix and actually got booked on shows, and I did
right.
two comedy clubs that time, and I got to do This Week Sucks Tonight. And I just think like, wow, I just made that happen by just doing stuff.
Yeah.
I just went out and did stuff and met people and I didn't know what I was doing. But I just think that's what you should do if you want to be successful, is just keep doing stuff. And it doesn't really matter if it's working or not working.
Yeah.
You don't know the results of what you're doing until months later
right.
when you try and draw these lines back and figure out where you are now and how you got there.
So, Jacob, whose dick did you suck to open for Harlan?
God, don't even fucking.
like, well, what's this?
If we're tracing it back,
do it. Do it a little bit with your comedy career. How did you get the good gigs you've gotten and like the success you've gotten now?
Well, straight up opening for Harlan Williams last week was the biggest comedy opportunity I've ever had.
Who is that?
You don't. He's massive. I mean, he's like he's in. I can't believe you don't know who Harlan. No.
Well, he was, me being a stoner.
Yeah.
It was it's fundamental because he's in.
Can you pull him up?
Dave yeah. Chappelle's.
Where'd you? Was this at Laugh Lines?
He's this like was the, at Boulder Theater, but it was hosted by Brad.
Okay.
Yeah. But so yeah,
he was in Half Baked. He was in Employee of the Month, Dane Cook's movie.
Yeah.
He was
yeah. In, I recognize him. I just wouldn't be able.
He's an OG.
He's an OG sure. comic too. I thought you know he's when I opened for him, like I knew of him, but I started watching a lot of his stand up, and he's like he's a much more silly version of Norm Macdonald. Like he still has that same kind of like dry delivery and whatnot, but it's just more silly and absurdist.
Mm-hmm.
But like if we're tracing it back, Brad Bellinger booked me on that show, and I met Brad Bellinger in Durango in 2018
at the Cannabis Crawl, right?
No, it was I guess it was 19. It was at the Wes Stein's drop-in show. Do you remember? He had that poster of people parachuting down. And
yeah.
it was a drop-in show at the Strader Theater, but it was like 15 comedians all doing like 10 or 15 minutes.
And big names, too.
Big names, and it was...
What was that?
For all of us, it was just another opportunity to do a show at the Strader, which was great.
Yeah, but I think something flopped and they did that instead.
Yeah, yeah.
They were supposed to do
else.
Like the competition, like the next best comic or something was supposed to happen.
Yeah, let's trace it back to that and then do another
no,
thing.
Take it back to the
abstract.
Take it back to the things you can control.
Yeah, so I met Brad, you know, there, and then we continued the relationship. I think we've all continued that relationship.
You know him better than I do.
Yeah, that sure. is true. He says that he's like a really big fan of my comedy and...
if I'm not gassing you up, you gas you up. That's
yeah,
good. That's
yeah,
good.
No, but he, I did a, he had already booked me on like the competition open mic in the Colorado Springs, and then he saw me at Epic do this one joke, and it's so dumb where I go, you guys ever take a big poopy fart right out of your butthole, and then you go woo wee? He loved it.
That's how I talk to my dog.
Yeah, and I just go, oh, that's a joke I'm working on.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I'm working on it. If I should say butthole or asshole?
Yeah, but maybe work on a tag, do an accent. But but he saw that and he booked me because of, I mean, he was already thinking about me because he's a big fan, but. I shouldn't say like that, but he likes my comedy. And so, yeah, that's what he booked me on. But it's crazy because, you know, that was him driving all the way down to Durango. I mean, we would have never met him.
Right.
I at least wouldn't have had such a close connection with him if he hadn't driven down to Durango and we had continued a relationship and whatnot.
Yeah.
I also filmed his set and gave it to him at the Strader Theater and he really liked that.
There's the ticket. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the...
And that was something that I did.
Yeah, where did you take initiative, do something no one asked you to do, and it led to something today that you would have had no idea at the time you'd be here? That's like a...
Yeah, the filming his set.
That's like a phenomenal example. You're like, I can film this and give it to him and then I'll have his email. Mm-hmm. And then also like a closer relationship where he's like, hey, thanks.
Yeah.
And you're like, exactly. Cool. He's like, hey, if you're in Denver, hit me up for a set. And then the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. Now you're opening for Alonzo Bolden. Who is that? That was his name?
Yeah. Alonzo Bolden.
Now you're Bowden? Bolden. Bolden.
It's Odin.
Odin? No.
Elliot, how you were saying that like action is required to make things happen.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you commit to that fully,
yeah,
it really makes just things begin to happen because mm-hmm. you're like putting in the time, the work, whatever it is.
Yeah,
I think that the van trip mm-hmm. is going to be like that.
That's initiative. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me of like so like when the Spanish shipped here, mm-hmm. when they arrived, they set their ships on fire.
Yeah, they burned the ships.
So they couldn't go back.
Yeah,
and like, they brought a bunch of Ford door.
Are you telling me that I have to light my van on fire
once you get to where you're going? Yeah, so you can't come back.
No, that's one of my favorite stories, and that's what I live. That's a lot of what I live by. Is like I'm fascinated with the idea of just burning the ship and cutting off. It's not cutting off all ties, but it's like
forcing action.
Yeah, forcing action, making that leap.
Right. I think it's impactful. It's changed the way I look at things. Just, and I think even like the job I've ended up in now has made me much better at comedy and much better at business, and I'm really grateful for that. Like I sit down and talk with people and think about how to be successful every day.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, start doing that.
You're like Tony Robbins.
Yeah. Sit down and talk with three people who are more successful than you about what they're doing to be successful.
Yeah.
And it freaking changes your life, man. Yeah, changes your attitude. True. You start doing things. You believe in yourself for some reason.
Yeah.
What would the name of your book be?
Name of my book?
Yeah.
Figuring it out.
I like that.
Figuring it out. Because I did Coming Out was my, the album I recorded was the title. Mm. So I want everything to be like
figuring the come out.
Yeah, figuring it out.
Figuring the come out. Swap it. Organizing the come.
Coming out. Figuring it out. Got it figured out. Putting it out. I don't know. I was trying to just make it sound like it would be like the sequel to my album.
I like that.
Coming out, figuring it out. Makes sense.
Yeah, it's a storyline.
And then after that, it's feeling it out. That's after I've been canceled. Feeling
it out. Finding it out. Fucking around and finding it out.
It really is obnoxious, but impactful.
No, and if we're talking about doing action, something that you've inspired me to do is, I remember, I think it was because you went to the Flagstaff Comedy Festival, or it was something that you did where, I mean, I knew that you had connections in Texas mm-hmm. Over spring break when I was in college, and I think you went down there and you like made the trip, and I was like, holy shit, that's really cool. And so I hit you up, you gave me some connections, and I did the same thing where I like took a leap, and it was like I drove 12 hours for only one booked show.
Right.
That I knew was going to be on for 7 minutes. I like drove 12 hours for 7 minutes, but it was still like a great trip. Like I learned a lot. I have a lot of connections in the Dallas Fort Worth scene now.
Yeah. Joe Rogan and them are like,
that was the connection you gave me.
Yeah. Thank you. Hey man, you should drive to Texas and ask for Joe. Joey Johnson is what I meant to say.
It is Joe. Yeah. Joey Johnson is that connect.
Yeah, I think it's really impactful, and then also just giving yourself credit for the things you've done.
Yeah,
I find because we were talking about the gym before we came here, which you didn't end up going, which is all good, bro. Hey, hey, some people take days off and I'll just keep.
Yeah, that's fine. I was creating something artistically.
Yeah, which yeah.
Is working another muscle.
Definitely. Some people take days off and those people end up in my wake, and that's fine.
In your wake.
That's all good. what was I saying? I was actually saying something thoughtful before I started being a dick.
All I heard was Joe Rogan.
Nootropics, CBD.
Nootropics, alpha brain, beta brain.
Alpha, beta, cuck brain. I saw you do a Zen, so I just thought I'd follow suit. Mm-hmm. No, I forget what I was saying. Oh, giving yourself credit, maybe? Oh, yeah, that's what I was getting at. I find myself, I compare myself to others all the time, especially in the gym setting.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to see other people and be like, oh, he's got more than I do.
Right.
So I've started an exercise where anytime I find myself comparing myself to other people, especially in the gym and in comedy, I have my journal with me, not today, but usually, and I write down one thing I've accomplished in that field.
Oh, nice.
Just to like stop comparing myself to what that person's doing, which I actually don't even know. It's just judgment looking at them.
Right.
And then I write down something I've done that was successful for me.
Yeah.
And then I compare that to them. No, not really.
Yeah.
I just write down what I've accomplished.
You're like, made an album.
And yeah.
You just like give it to him.
And he's like, I just benched 315. This is really confusing.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And I think that's worth addressing too, is that, you know, that feeling of comparing yourself to others. And it's like so cliche, but in comedy, you really, really can't do it. Like it's like, it's natural for you to do it and be like, oh, why is he getting spots? Or like, oh, you know, just constantly comparing your level of funniness to another person. But it's so subjective and it's just like not worth the mental capacity.
Right. And then if every person in comedy were to track back, like we just did a little bit, you'd be like, oh, and the reason that they're featuring this at this show is because they recorded a different guy's set in 2018.
Right. Exactly. And you're like,
so it's really the only thing I should be doing is stuff.
Yeah.
I should just be doing stuff. That's all they're doing. Yeah. Just keep doing, just, yeah. Make something happen. That's all it is.
It really is. I mean, it's just doing favors and not asking for anything in return.
Mm-hmm. Except for spots in 3 years.
Right, exactly. So I'm going to film everyone's set, and then 3 years later, I'm going to be like, hey, do you know Harlan Williams? Like, why don't you book a show and then have me open for him?
That would be great. I want to see your creative project. Did you?
Oh, yeah, sure. If Evan can pull it up, it's in my Google Drive.
So Evan's going to log into your Google account?
Well, I would have to give him the password.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Do you want to just send it to my email?
Yeah, I can just send it.
Do you want to pause while we do this and I can pee?
Yeah, I have to pee too, actually.
Okay. Well, can we take a quick break? I would have done, if I needed the address, is I would have scrolled back through the text thread and found it, or searched it and found it.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah. So.
What did you do?
No, that's... Well, what I do is if I go to one place one time, I remember it forever.
Oh, nice. So you have a photographic memory. Did you see the...
Just with directions,
like a
though.
Geographical
memory? I sent the email. Hopefully, you'll be able to open it.
You want
to
move on from this quickly? I was going to do a few more minutes on...
Oh, on you being geographically...
No, more about how, like, you had the resources, but you asked me for the resources instead.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy to do, but I just the thought I had, because, you know, we've been fighting, all of us.
Right.
And I'm choosing not to fight with you guys because it's more fun to not, but...
Right.
I was like, well, for me to find the address, I either have to text Evan or I have to go scroll back and find it, which are the same two things
you would
have to do to find the
address. And I try not to do that. I try not to ask people, you know, when the answer's obvious.
So that's
why I found it.
Got you. Well done. Well done. Well done on that part. And then the part about me being a genius is just that. If I go to one place one time, I can get back there every time.
Yeah.
Is that
true?
Pretty much. I could go back to your parents' house without directions.
Really?
Yeah. I'd find it.
That's cool.
It is cool. It's really awesome. And I wanted to say it on the air for like my exes and stuff to know that.
Yeah. Do you think your exes are listening?
No, because I've been back to their houses and they can't hear anymore.
That's what I was about to say. They wouldn't say anything because they know that you could get back to their house in a jiffy.
Yeah.
I am also an open, if you guys ever just need to message me, I can just resend the address.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I did message him, and then I was like, no, I can find it.
Yeah, but the more important thing here is like geographically.
Yeah, Elliot's a genius geographically.
I hope
there it is.
Okay, this is good.
All right, so this is from my set at the Laugh Lines talk show competition showcase.
Okay.
Scream and shout. Make some noise for
Jim Jeffries, I think is what he was going to say.
Yeah, that's what he was going to say.
How did expanding the screen make it buffer?
I don't
it was working.
Just try to restart it.
Jacob Jonas.
This is good enough sound.
My fellow Americans, I have spoken to you from this historic office on many occasions and about many things.
So. And you laugh tracked it?
A few months ago, I told the American people I did not trade arms for hostages. My heart and my best intentions still tell me that's true. But the facts and the evidence tell me it is not.
Oh my God, it seems up so bad.
I asked so many questions about the hostages' welfare, but I didn't ask enough about the specifics of the total Iran plan.
It looks like you tried.
Another major aspect of the board's finding regards the transfer of funds to the Nicaraguan Contras. The Tower Board wasn't able to find out what happened to this money.
So that's the whole thing.
That's awesome. Thanks. That's so funny.
Thanks.
What were those crowd reaction shots?
It was from Brendan Schaub's special.
That's great. That's so funny. Only feedback, put what do they call it? Subtitles of the speech.
Oh, yeah, that would be funny.
In there before you post it.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to it without volume and you read that.
Yeah.
Because most people, when they're scrolling, are listening without volume.
Right.
And then they start seeing that and they're like, what is this?
My fellow Americans.
Yeah. I think that'd be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you actually do like Reagan impression in brackets and then my fellow Americans?
Or not even.
No, don't do it.
just the fucking.
Just, or maybe do Reagan voice or something.
Reagan voice.
Don't give away what you're doing.
Right.
At the beginning. And you just stole the crowd reacts off his, because his special was on YouTube, right?
His special is absolute dog shit, horseshit, garbage, fucking dumpster fire, flaming, want to stomp it out with my fucking feet. Horrible. I hate it.
So it's pretty good?
No, I mean, it's like,
just
as a
small inspiration.
As a comedian watching that special,
yeah.
It was just rage inducing. Absolutely.
Would you rather listen to my album, which is also on YouTube?
You know, I would.
Thank you.
And that says a lot.
About how bad
you didn't
specials.
Use those crowd reactions, though, did you?
Because I wanted the Reagan impression to crush. So.
What was the actual show? I don't know about the show.
Oh, it was a like a competition show where 10 comedians did 5 minutes, and then they got interviewed by Brad for about 3 minutes. And Jeremy Cash won. It was actually $500 cash prize. So
okay, Jeremy Cash prize.
Yeah, Jeremy Cash prize. He crushed. He did really, really good.
I did hear about this. Was in the Springs.
Mm-hmm.
So does he live in the Springs now, Brad?
No, he lives in Boulder. But
he just runs shows down there.
Well, that's the first show that he's run. He usually runs shows in Boulder, like at the Boulder Theater.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Who'd you open for?
You open for Bill Cosby?
Yeah. Comeback time. Chris D'Elia is back on the road. Bill Cosby.
He is.
Bill Cosby. Should be. Once Chris you serve Cosby. Your time, you should be allowed to keep living your life. Does he have life? Does he have life in prison?
Who? Bill Cosby?
Yeah.
No, he's out.
Oh, he is?
Okay. He's out. Oh, yeah.
Hey. I do remember the memes when he got
That's
out.
That's what you named your album after.
Yeah, coming out.
Coming out. Coming a out. Bill Cosby story.
It's coming with it. It is coming with a U, so it's like way worse.
I wanted to ask you a question. Where do you see your comedy career in the future? Because it seems, and this is third person, whatever. We talked about it before where it's just like a point in your life right now where you're prioritizing other things and whatever. But it seems like you're going to less mics. It seems like, you know, you're still a comedian, you're still doing comedy, but it seems like you kind of step back.
Yeah. Oh man, this answer is going to be so annoying. I think if I was listening to it, I would hate it. I don't know. I really do still want to, I want to be a professional comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I think we do. Like,
yeah, all
like
of us.
I want nothing more than to have a career in comedy. I don't know. For now, I'm enjoying comedy more now than I ever have. Part of it's fitting in Denver. Like, I guess I'm looking for the intrinsic value in what I'm doing and trying to do a really good job when I'm on stage, even though I'm definitely getting up less often. I'm a little less connected from the mics, but I feel more connected with the people.
Mm. I was going to say, it's pretty enjoyable when you don't wait around 3 hours.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe that's it. And I should go to open mics more. I know that, but it's also like, I enjoy comedy when I get up, and I try and make the most of it every time. So I'm focusing on that. I think there'll be a point in my life where I get to be a career comedian. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've started considering recently that I haven't ever is do the full-time comedy career later in your life.
Oh, interesting.
Like, cause it's hard now. Cause now is like the grind time, right? Now it's like, we gotta put our grind in until we make it. Yeah. But there's another way you can make it. Cause the idea of making it is like, right, I just don't want to have another job. Right. I want to be able to make a full-time career out of comedy and perform for good audiences and make enough money to live and support my family and the lifestyle I want. That's it. That's all we really want. Right.
Right.
My thought is do that like a little bit later. Do that. And when I say a little bit, like do that when you're like 50, do that at the other end of your life.
How do you envision? So
I feel like a grandpa where I'm like, but you got to go to college right out of high school.
Yeah.
You don't get to take the time off.
Yeah. That's
you don't get to do it.
that's how
you're
I
never
feel.
Gonna go back.
Yeah. I mean, life's long and you go through career changes and you do things, but I really like my job now. I wouldn't be able to live the life I want to live off comedy now.
Yeah.
I tried that for a while and like, and that like scarcity mindset is brutal. It's really hard to not have income. Like you think so much more about every decision and then you're also trying to make it as a comedian. And I think that kind of just put me in like a panic where I was like, I don't even know what to do next. And I feel like the thing I do should have, a lot comedy here for that. It should have like money attached to it. And it put comedy into a weird realm for me where it was just to make money and make a living. And that was probably the least enjoyable time for comedy is when
you put a lot of pressure on it
when I was a full-time comedian. Yeah. Cause the idea was make it right. Like figure out in the next,
it was necessary.
I have enough. Yeah. I have enough savings to live for 6 months. So figure out how to make it as a comedian then. And it was like, oh my God, I should have made a plan before I did that.
Right.
And I mean, I kind of did, but I didn't have like clear like actions and things I could be doing. So I was like, all right, I'll quit and like start to figure it out. And I think I grew and figured some stuff out, but that not having reliable income and just like being like, I don't know if I'm able to live the life I want to live for myself and the people I care about. And that's like scary, man. So that wasn't good. So I'm really inclined now to take advantage of every opportunity I'm given in comedy, seek out new opportunities still like I've been doing, but really like live my life with like my family, my loved ones, and like start a family and do comedy at the end. Like you could do comedy now.
Right.
And you have to make it to where you can like support.
So instead of being a starving artist as one, you'd rather starve a family.
No, what I would rather. Okay. There's a key part of this I left out that's missing. Once. So you could do like retire and be a comedian. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is
that's
like,
your plan. That's
yeah,
your goal?
Retire early and make
and
a lot
I think
of money.
There's a lot of people that do their passion as soon as they finish
right.
making their
money. Well, and it's not like I'm not doing comedy in the interim. Imagine if you do comedy for the next 20 years at a less than 100% effort. You do comedy the way I'm doing it, which is I try really hard when I'm up, but I'm not trying to exhaust myself where this is the only way I'm going to have a happy life.
Right.
Comedy is awesome. I love doing it. I want to travel and perform as often as I can with comedy, but I want to keep my day job and I want to buy a house with my girlfriend eventually. And I want to have kids and raise them. And then once they're out of the house, retire.
And then
do comedy. And you've been doing it for another 10 years. You're good. You have the connections. You have the talent. And it's not the stakes are just lower. Or I guess this is like a really long-winded way of saying like just wait for your parents to die. Right?
Yeah.
Not really, but just like wait for the right opportunity to like really dig into comedy and see where I am then. But there's no rush, I guess, which is like maybe why I'm enjoying it more now too, is like I don't feel like I have to make it in the next 5 years so I can spend the rest of my life as a career comedian.
There's something about enjoying the time more when you're not as pressured, you know, when it's not like I have to do well.
It's massively impactful for me. And maybe it's like, I don't know, things change. Maybe I'll do this job for another 5 years and have enough money saved up again to quit again. And I'll be more experienced then. I've done it before. And maybe I'll have more comedy connections and higher paying gigs at that time. And it's really appropriate.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll have kids in 5 years. And it'll be much more appropriate for me to keep my day job and do comedy on the weekends and raise a family and have a good life and then do comedy after that. It's never going to leave my life. It's something I love doing. It's something I want to do for a long time, but I don't know, I'm in a good spot everywhere else, which I think maybe being in that for the first time has like freed comedy to truly just be like a passion and a hobby. But I don't want to say hobby because that makes it sound like I don't take it seriously. And it's important. Everybody in this room takes comedy seriously, right, guys?
We're the comedy police. We beat the shit out of non-comedians.
Yeah.
No, and that's definitely a fair answer. I mean, the success in comedy, the thing that I really do love about comedy is, in terms of success, it's so subjective. You can have as much comedy as you want in your life or as little. Like, yeah, you can go to an open mic once a month, or you can try to hit like 15 mics a week. It's all about how much fun you're having. And I think stepping back, you know, it's good in certain points. But at least for me personally, like, I think that sometimes when I was talking about this with a traveling comic who's staying the weekend at my house, I feel like when I bump up like my comedy from like 7 times a week to like 10 times a week and I'm putting more effort into it, it gets more fluid and it's more enjoyable. Like, that doing that grind, at least at this point in my life, is more enjoyable because I can like really cultivate a lot of material, and that's exciting, and finding new stuff to work on and getting really comfortable on stage because you're doing it 15 times a week. Like,
I was going to say, that's huge. When you're performing often, you're performing well. That's true for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine it's almost like if you hike twice a month, it's a blast and you enjoy it. But yeah, if you do it every single day, you're just like a powerful hiker.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you probably enjoy it more because you can go on longer hikes and get to cooler places.
Yeah. There's pros and cons.
Like, you don't want to do it that day.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know, it's only going to make you stronger.
I think.
Yeah. Go on.
No, I approach things seasonally as well. Where like
hikes.
I do comedy during the summer.
No, I mean, like, literally I do. Like, I take time to evaluate where I am in my life and what's important for me in the next 2 months. And there's been times where it's been comedy and it's really focused and I am going out.
Yeah.
At least 7 sets a week. And there's been times where I've taken marginal step backs and bigger steps back where I'm just doing shows I'm booked on, or I'm like, and I think that's important and helpful. And I'll go back into a more committed realm of comedy. I'm coming into that now. Like, I have a lot of gigs lined up in the next month and a half, and I'm planning on trying to get my name back out there again.
Yeah.
But it's like, really, like, I guess the actions you can take to be proactive and make things happen are how I determine my seasonality. So if like I'm in season, I'm like doing as many shows as I can, and I'm actively asking for spots, looking for opportunities, applying to festivals.
Yeah.
Going and supporting things that I wouldn't normally, that I'm not on. So I'm just like going and supporting the scene. So like making that as a conscious choice to take more actions and more things come your way. And then,
well, that's showing up to festivals you're not even on.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and is supporting the scene and going out.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And then I think like the holiday period for me is typically like a good time to step back. Mm-hmm. Like, because I've tried doing it before where it's like, it's going to be Christmas and I'm going to go visit my family in Fort Collins and I'm going to do mics and I'm going to try and get shut. And it's like, man, I got overwhelmed and I didn't enjoy the time with my family and I didn't enjoy my time on stage. So yeah, just like accepting in your mind, like, I'll do a little less comedy November through January. And then in the spring, I'm going to ramp it up and try and get a bunch of gigs going and try and get on some festivals this summer. That's like really appropriate. That's how most work and sports and TV shows happen, is there's the really busy times and then there's the step back times. So I think consistency can be every day, but consistency can also be 2 months on, 1 month off, 2 months yeah, on, 1 month off, or whatever you need it to be is still being consistent.
It's just whatever's best for your mental health. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Because like some people with their mental health, like, it's good to grind 100% of the time. It really just depends on your personality type and you know, the obligations that you have in your life.
Yeah. And what's important to you, like, man, there's a lot of people that the most important thing in their life is comedy. Mm-hmm. Would you describe yourself as that?
Yeah, I mean,
but you could also say it's your career, and I don't want to disparage anyone that does that. I think it's,
yeah, really, I don't,
good,
I don't know. I mean, part of this journey and the trip that I'm taking is to kind of figure my shit out. Like I'm centering it around comedy. I'm going to try to get as many spots, and I'm really going to fully dive into comedy. But also, you know, I've like come to the realization that I'm going to be traveling a lot. I'm going to try to focus on like video documentation and everything like that. And so there's going to be a lot of times where I'm not doing comedy every night, that right. I'm just traveling or camping or living on BLM land or whatever. And so, you know, I mean, that's like part of the goal of the trip is to like step more into comedy, but also step back and be like,
yeah,
what am I doing? What do I want to do? Cause I just feel like, you know, I have to make that, that leap. Because if I don't, then it's so easy to like continue in Denver as like with a solid job and you know, friends and comfortability and warmness and whatever.
Right.
Sometimes it takes masturbating in a Walmart parking lot.
Sometimes I gotta crank one out in a Planet Fitness parking lot to and really kind of center myself.
Freaking hot, dude.
I do think there's a lot to say about how like the best jokes come from like a real honest place, and those only come from experience.
Yeah,
like when you can talk about your perspective or whatever,
right? Which you need to like get outside of comedy, I think.
Yeah,
and I've thought about that too. It's like, and this I'm not. It's not hate on people who live in a house,
right?
Or like live in apartments,
you're already right? Guy,
yeah, I'm the yeah. guy. It's not, you know, to all the NPCs that follow society's rules. This isn't an insult to you, smooth brains. But
thank you.
No. But I was thinking about it, like, going on this journey or whatever, I feel like there's going to be a lot more chances for me. I've already thought, like, whenever I go to a new place, like when I went to Atlanta to do comedy, I was so much more energetically creative. Like, I just had, like, these creative ideas because I was, like, seeing new things and I was looking at new things and I was in new situations. And I feel like it's a lot easier to cultivate, at least in terms of comedy, like the jokes and the content that you want when you put yourself in different situations. Because when you're going to work and you're driving the same route, and then you're like, everything is the same in your life. You're eating the same thing, whatever. Yeah, it numbs your brain and it's comfortable and it's nice, but also it's harder to create things.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I know I've told you this and I don't want to take credit for anything you're doing. And I told Josh this too. Like way back when we were in Durango, it was like, the first time I went to Flagstaff, I came back and I was better. I was noticeably better.
Yeah.
Like I could tell. I was like, oh, I just went on the road, which wasn't not go on the road in terms of like I'm booked on a tour. Go on the road in terms of I drove somewhere I wasn't invited.
Right.
But I did comedy 6 times in 3 days, which I'd never done before.
Right.
So I came back to Durango and I was sharp, man. And I had new stuff. I wrote about my experience there.
Yeah.
And I remember telling you guys, like, just go somewhere. Yeah. Just drive somewhere and do comedy and you'll come back better.
Fate favors the bold. That's one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah. I think it's really impactful. You take those away from you. So you're about to do that every day for it's like literally gonna be incredible. And if I were to say a little more, gas in both of you up, for you, I really admire what you're doing. It's terrifying to me.
It's terrifying to me too.
I've like thought about it and like I'll daydream and fantasize about it because you're doing it. And I'm like, that's the whole point. He's gonna do this. He's gonna do that. He's gonna be on the road doing comedy. It's gonna be so cool. It's so like, you're congrats. Like genuinely. Take some time when you leave town to give yourself credit for making this decision and like appreciate the failures and the successes that come with it immediately. You deserve both.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're turning into motivational speaker Elliot time.
Yeah.
Evan, what I said before about like taking initiative and doing things, you are the greatest example of that I could think of off the top of my head on a daily basis of someone that just
absolutely
had an idea, had some stuff and decided to make something happen. You did that out of nothing. I mean, you decided you wanted to do this and made it happen. And I'm sure I'm smoothing over the hard parts, but congrats to you for doing that too. It's really important that you did for yourself and for the people that you're supporting on there.
No, dude, I fucking love podcasting.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's like, I mean, I've met so many interesting people just by like doing it long enough and meeting people, and like the conversations go far enough. And like, it's really, I mean, like I've done some with people that I know from like childhood. I've done some that I like have never met before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the different podcasts go into so many different routes and like, no, I love it. And like comedians are the funniest people in the world.
Right.
So like I feel lucky. Still.
Besides liberals.
They're hilarious.
Just comedians.
I mean, I'm stoked that people enjoy it. I'm stoked that we have listeners.
You've created so many opportunities in the comedy world, just in terms of podcasting. I mean, you run like 5 or 6 shows?
12.
Or more? I have
12?
I have about 10 under the network.
Okay.
That's crazy.
But the idea is I want to highlight people that are hilarious.
Yeah.
I feel like these voices should be out there. And this whole scene of Denver, it gets put as number 3 or 4 every single time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it could be 1 or 2.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Good for you.
No. And
I love that ambition.
Well, especially with how much of a community is here.
Yeah.
How there is love for each other.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There is people look out for each other.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people working really hard.
Yeah.
And I feel like it needs the highlight. I feel like people should be if I want to be a comedian, I have to go to Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And dude, you're so right. And that's that's inspiring because it's the big three, right? It's New York, LA, Chicago. And then under that.
But even Chicago has an asterisk.
Right, it does.
Right? Because people are for sketch and theater and all these improv. And I feel like number 3 is up for grabs.
It is.
I think that needs to be.
Not out of reach.
Yeah.
Solidified.
Dude, how crazy would this scene be? How good do you think it would be if every person in the scene, on a daily basis, God, I'm such a corporate douche, just woke up and was like, hey, how do I make Denver the best comedy scene in the country? And they went out and they did that every day. And you thought there was something bigger than yourself when you came out to perform at Comedy Works or you came out to perform at Epic Open Mic.
I still have that childlike wonder about the comedy scene.
So important.
Especially here.
Yeah. So good.
I still am amazed. And when I talk to people, I'm still giddy and shit. Yeah. I think that's one of the most fun parts about the Denver comedy scene.
Yeah.
Is people are respectful, but you can be around people that are legitimate comedians.
Yeah.
Especially Comedy Works. Just stepping on that stage is such a fucking opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's right here.
You know what I realized? I got a guest spot at the Denver Comedy Lounge yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I've done it in the new setup. I don't know if you've seen it.
I know the new setup. I haven't done it since they changed it over.
It made me, it was so good. I mean, it didn't make me sad because I was leaving. I mean, it did actually make me sad because I was leaving, but the Denver has so many cool venues like Denver Comedy Underground, Denver Comedy Lounge. And when I got up on that stage, it was a club. It's a club. And it was just such a fun show. You know, it's very short shows. And, Ben Kronberg's super nice. And he gives opportunities to so many people.
Right.
And that's part of the community where Ben Kronberg, it's the same thing where he went into, Colorado Saki Company.
Right.
He saw the back garage area and he was like, I could make a comedy club out of this.
And give people space.
Yeah, give people space. And now it's one of the most successful things. He runs 5 shows a weekend and they're fantastic shows. He sells out almost every one of them.
And he's one of those people that have given back to the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, how people consider this a gym. There's a lot of people that come here to work out.
Right.
I also really appreciate the people that stay.
He's building the equipment.
And people that clean the equipment and make it happen.
Cleaning the towels and all that shit.
Yeah.
And the best is the guy that works at the gym and is also the scariest person you've ever seen.
Wendy.
Yeah. That was really impactful what you just said, Evan. That was really cool. I think there's a lot to be gained from that. More people approaching this with the mindset of if we work together, 40 of us, if there's 40 comedians in Denver that if we work together, we could create the best comedy scene in the country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see it, all the DIY shows that pop
up. And that's what I'm saying. It's those are the people that are giving back. We get together and we figure out what are we doing to make this happen? We're a phenomenal comedy scene.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's on the way. And we're in the footsteps of giants. I mean, there's been people working on this scene way before we stepped in here.
Yeah, but let's take the credit, you know? That's another part
those
of
are
that's another
footsteps.
Part of the corporate world is when you do succeed, make sure
you write it in a journal.
Make sure you get the paycheck you deserve for everyone else's work over the years, I think is what's it. I there was a couple things I wanted to ask you about your plan. Mm-hmm. Two things really, just opposites. What do you see as your greatest shortcoming if you've thought about it going into this? And what do you think you're going to be the best at going into this? Whichever one you want to answer first. I'm just curious how much thought you've put into.
No, those are good questions. I think one of my biggest shortcomings is probably organizational skill of what I want. What I want to like convey and make in the long term. But I think that's something I'm going to figure out. Also, car skills.
Right. Very logistical things.
Very logistical things that are very important to the trip.
My biggest shortcoming is going to be getting the driver's license. Yeah. After that, I'm set.
No, but it's actually, there's a lot of parts of about this trip where I'm very nervous and I know that I don't have, I'm not.
Have you changed a tire?
Yeah, I know how to change a tire. Okay. I know how to like do an oil change and clean coolant. It's like all surface level car stuff. And
he has a gun, dude. You don't need to know how to change a tire. I just have a gun.
Yeah, if my tires were, I just shoot the fucking van.
No, I just meant you could get anyone to do anything for you, like pretty easily.
True.
Do you have zip ties? You can get them at Walmart.
I have zip ties.
So you got a gun and zip ties. Guess what? You got free laborers.
but yeah, no, there's a lot of things that I'm nervous that I don't have a lot of experience in. And I was about to say that I'm not prepared, but I am prepared because it's like, for cars, for example, everything that I know about a car, I've dealt with personally, like through a car issue or just learning about it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty much what's going to happen. I'm very adaptive. And, as far as like my strong suit, I think, when I put myself into uncomfortable situations, that's when I succeed the most. Like every time that, like when I went to Atlanta, or Texas, mm-hmm. or every time that I've made a big leap, New York,
Spain,
I get better, and I'm just like really good at adapting to situations. Because I feel like I have a very low overhead of what's acceptable to me. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. I'm fine, like living in filth and pissing in gas stations and truck stops or whatever. And I was talking to my friend about this. I we're all pretty privileged. Like we all went to college. Like, we all mm-hmm. lived in houses, whatever, had a family.
Yeah.
I recently drove through the South, dude. And like when you're talking about the poor down in the South is a different type of poor.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
And you're going to see all kinds of different perspectives, like people's, levels of success they've achieved.
Yeah,
right. It's like just holding down a job at a gas station is like, wow, oh, hey, whoa, look at Johnny.
No, seriously. And I'm really excited, and I really do want to interview those people. Like that's like one of my main things that I want to do.
Okay.
I want to like get a pulse of specifically like political feeling in the United States. That's something
cool.
that I'm really attracted to is going to, fucking Mobile, Alabama or Kensington, Kentucky, where, industry jobs have left and people are poor and addicted to opiates or whatever.
Right.
And just be like, hey, what do you think about America? Who do you think is to blame for all the shortcomings of America? How would you make America better? Like,
right.
That's like something that I really want to focus on.
So you're like applying your degree right now too.
Yeah. It's like sociological. Wild. And I have like a rough idea.
This is also like an artistic endeavor.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh,
definitely.
And I mean, you're documenting America.
Yeah.
In a weird
yeah.
way.
That's, yeah.
I mean, if you do that kind of stuff, that's wow.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah. Those are the two parts that I'm really. That's another thing that I have to figure out is how to juggle comedy and like writing comedy and mm-hmm. then also doing that.
Right.
Like those are
the interview. The interview thing. You mean?
Yeah.
If you just view that as through a comedic lens.
Yeah.
That's exactly. part of. That's like your.
It's part of the grind.
That's your project, right?
Right, right.
Which I think is like, I know you've said that before, but I don't think I fully grasped what you meant by it.
Right.
And also, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a part of comedy. I don't know how funny it'll be talking about political views.
Right.
I had Ali on the pod once, and he was like, getting very serious about a lot of real things in his life.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't even know how to make this funny.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, dude. There's no way to make this funny. It's just fucking real life.
Yeah.
And like, it was like a little bit of like, you can like make something valuable content wise that doesn't have to be humorous.
Yeah, that's true.
Like it is interesting to just hear somebody's perspective and not make fun of it.
Yeah. When you're so ingrained into comedy, it's like you try to make humor out of everything.
Yeah.
But also like to your point, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I want to have like a comedic lens and whatever, keep my comedy. But with things like that, like I'm really not interested in having comedy as the forefront of the project.
Right.
Like I really do want to like dive into, you know, and it's like, I don't know. It's not like I want to become like a documentary person or whatever, but it's like something that genuinely interests me. And I just want to see how it turns out. You know?
No, I think it's phenomenal. How well do you know? Do you know Jordan Klepper? I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, I know
the Daily Show correspondent. Yeah, fan or no?
Yeah, no. Jordan Klepper, who basically goes to like MAGA rallies and stuff and interviews people. Yeah,
he's boxed in pretty significantly with the show he works on and the views of that show.
Yeah,
and maybe it's because you guys are both handsome and tall.
That's but like, why you're making a connection.
Yeah, but I'm seeing you as like a freelance version of that, where you're not working for a show and you're. Just gaining information.
The Channel 4 guy.
About the world.
I know, and that's what I was about to say. All Gas, No Breaks.
He was originally doing All Gas, No Breaks, right?
Yeah.
That was, like, owned by a company. And then he went to go do his own endeavors. And, like, a month ago, he went to Ukraine.
Yeah.
And he's literally going around interviewing, like, refugees.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's not comedic whatsoever. Like, it is a very serious that I appreciated being able to watch.
I know. And what I really respect about All Gas, No Break, I forgot his name, but the guy who interviews is that I respect people who are on the cutting edge of things. And that's what I want to do. And that's like, I think I'm pretty good at it with like social media marketing and like TikTok and everything.
Andrew Callahan.
And I think in order to like put myself in a situation where I can find something truly unique that I can create myself that has like all of my artistic expression, whether it be comedic oriented or not.
Right.
I would have to put myself in a situation where I'm like living in a van or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I really respect people who carve out something that does not exist right now. And that's like my ultimate goal.
I think I'm really excited about it for you.
Thanks.
I think, like we talked about earlier, just action, do stuff and you don't know the outcome.
Right.
Until later. And then you look back and you're like, whoa, this is a phenomenal example of that. And more specifically, this project, you're going to do it and you're going to talk to people and see where it goes. And sometimes it'll be funny and you can post clips of it. And sometimes it'll be serious and it's going to have all kinds of mixed results. You don't know what the outcome of this is going to be.
Yeah.
But doing it is so good for you with the way I know you and the way you're so good at pop culture and knowing what's going on in the world and like even beyond pop culture, just like culture references. You're so good at that, that if you spend time getting to know people all over the country and getting a good feel for what America's like with firsthand experience and anecdotes, you're going to come back with such good material and it might not be stand up. Like whatever comes of this project, you don't know now is going to be awesome. And it'll probably be a combination of TikToks and stand up and perspective and growth that's like really, really effective.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's going to be great for you.
Or maybe you'll get a flat tire
and then I'll be like, fuck this.
Yeah.
But this is bullshit. And then I'll just.
And then shoot the van.
Yeah. I'll just rob another person for their car.
Right.
I do think that, like, for like, if you look at like your life, how you were saying back in all these chapters, like comedically, you can look at all these bullet points and things in a story. Like, it when you're taking this new big chapter, it almost feels like it's probably a new book.
Yeah.
Like you're literally ending a book and you're about to start a whole new beginning of a new series.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I mean, it really it's fucking, I mean, that's how I felt buying the equipment. I didn't realize how far it was going
to
go.
Exactly. Right. You just wanted to podcast.
But I bought the equipment before I had ever been on a stage.
Really?
For an open mic. Yeah, absolutely. Wild. Yeah. I was podding before that.
Yeah.
But like, and then I was like, well, I want to, you know, be around cool people. And then I started the open mics. Then I built relationships. It was literally like,
But steps, you made the commitment and you're like, fuck it. I'm buying.
This is what I'm going to do.
I'm buying the podcast equipment.
Yeah. I'm buying a podcast. I'm
buying a full podcast.
I didn't write them down until just now, but I thought in the car to ask you those two questions. And then I also thought briefly about what my answers would be for you.
Oh, okay.
I obviously want to know your answers, I want to tell you what I think as well. And I mean it for this to be complimentary and honest.
Yeah.
So you nailed it. Your weakness, brother. You know yourself. it's your logistics, bro. But I think there's a really good positive to take away from that is they're not that hard.
Right,
you can get good at that easily and just like write a list, you know?
I know.
Just make a couple lists and you'll be fine. And that's really good because that's not that hard to do. And the reason I'm saying that is because the thing that you're really good at is you're funny as fuck.
Oh, thanks, man.
you really are. I've thought that since the first time I've seen you perform is you have uniqueness and willingness to divert from reality in funny ways and push the line and be almost an absurdist, but also have like a really distinct voice with it where like some absurdists are all over the place. You're an absurdist in the same voice all the time and it's effective and just remind yourself that often.
Thanks.
That you're really funny and you have a really good voice and comedy and perspective. And
I think
that's
awesome
going to take you really far.
That Thanks. You do enjoy political stuff and mm-hmm. nobody knows what angle you're coming
from. Yeah.
Like you don't take a side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's awesome.
Yeah.
You're able to toe that line of like being ambiguous politically.
Right.
And that's like, if you're interested in those kinds of things, I mean, that's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that shows that you're like open as a person. Anybody yeah. can enjoy it.
But yeah, that's, I just wanted to make sure to tell you that before you left. You'll do a really good job of being funny. And man, if you can build
a fucking list.
If you can figure out how Google Calendar works, bro, you're going to be so set.
No, it is. I'm glad that you said that too, because I know that's a good point. I mean, like, I mean, even the what I'm doing with the van right now, I'm already becoming more logistical and being like, oh, I have to finish this by Tuesday. I have to, you know, by this month.
Right.
And so, yeah, and I'm like working on logistics right now. And I know that the only way that I can get better at that is to force myself to do it. So.
Yeah. I think, what do you think about this? I think we're opposites.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
I think I'm so good at this. I could crush it. I could run a business all damn day just for fun, dude. Let me sell your Girl Scout cookies. Do you want to make money at this or no?
Yeah.
Hey, what size backpack do you want to walk out of here with or whatever prizes they get?
Yeah.
I think funny takes effort for me. I'm good. I'm funny.
Right. Yeah. You are funny.
I think I'm enjoyable to be around and I'm funny in conversations, but making my funny on stage, that's what takes a lot of effort for me in writing and trying it out and getting better at it and finding my voice.
Right.
You seem to just have a really innate sense of funny and wild, and that's awesome. But I have to approach an equation, so that's all good.
The way that you, I mean, it's just two different ways of doing comedy. But I mean, ever since I met you, you know, you'd have like different writing exercises and you'd have your entire notebook. Like you come at it very analytically.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, that's just a different method of doing it.
Right.
But yeah, we're total opposites. I mean, it's like, you know, right. I'm a free spirit, non-NPC who, you know.
Right. No. Keep going. No, finish the metaphor. That's good. Because
I'm a free spirit, non-NPC who has original thoughts. And then, no, I'm kidding.
And I'm an accountant.
No, but and to bring it back to like Durango, I knew that I wanted to team up with you when we were leaving because, I knew that I wanted to become your roommate because we were talking about that before I left Durango.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Elliot and I are going to be like the best team. And we were a good team, but I was like, we're going to be the best team because like he's all the organizational brains and I'm all the creativity and we can like blend together.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like not true on both levels because I mean, we both are creative and organizational, but we're on both like on opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah. Everybody has both things in them and to different degrees.
Right.
And I think, there's people that make it as comedians career wise, because they can figure out how to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're also just really good at running a business and getting a following.
Right.
And then they made it. There's funnier people that never figured out how to sell tickets.
Right.
So they're still in their hometowns doing the local shows and doing well, but so I think you need to be able to apply both and figure out to what degree. And a lot of successful people also outsource shit.
Yeah.
If you're getting good money for comedy and you're not good at business, find a manager, find an agent, find ways to get helped in that area.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It reminds me of just like the difference between Andrew Schultz and Dave Attell.
Right.
Where like you can be the funniest person.
Yeah.
You'll never be a household name unless... Like, right. You market it well.
Right.
Like you do the business side.
Right. And Andrew Schultz is really good at marketing, really good at business.
Oh, yeah.
And he wanted to come out with these self-produced YouTube specials. So he hires a team of funny people and a team of writers and a team of social media people to help him make it happen. And maybe that's the way to go.
And Dave doesn't know what Instagram is.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I was actually talking to another comic about this, but it's like the same, like we were talking about Dave Attell specifically, and it was like, there's people who are like true comics or like true creatives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not saying it's better or worse or whatever, but like Dave Chappelle or Dave Attell, is a perfect example of that, where he like doesn't give a fuck about any of the marketing. He doesn't care. Like the only reason that he's famous is because he's so goddamn good.
Right.
And he doesn't like, it was Josh Creedon that I was talking to. And I think Josh Creedon said that he saw Dave Attell go into the Comedy Cellar at like a 1 a.m. show on a Friday, which is like, he's way better than that. Like he could be on a 9 p.m. But the only reason that he went up there in a black hoodie so nobody would see him until he got on stage, the only reason he did that was because he just wanted to do comedy.
Right.
Like he just wanted to tell jokes.
I thought of some new stuff today and I got to say it. I want to try that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's admirable. I like, that's awesome. I honestly feel the same way with like, social media wise, that's not my thing. I hate engaging with it, trying to post, trying to make it less. So like, I'm with Dave Oakley is what you're saying, right? I'm with David Oakley in that realm of.
Or you could do like the mixture of both. Go hard into social and not care, like Ari Shaffir, and just burn your career based off of tweets.
Right. But I guess, I mean, it's Ari Shaffir is actually a social media genius, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He still masters marketing.
Because he's created.
The Amazing Racist. Do you remember that?
No, is that a.
The Ari Shaffir, The Amazing Racist? He was just like, it was like, I don't.
Dude, it was wild.
Yeah. I like, you know, I respect Ari Shaffir, but I'm not a huge fan of his comedy. But he did, like, early 2000s, he would just, like, go up to people in a fucking Klan outfit.
Right.
And just, like, say crazy shit.
That's classic.
Yeah.
Classic comedy.
Obviously, it's like, you know, you can give him, you can criticize him for his choice on how to get people to follow him or whatever, but he's really good at it.
But yeah, you can't say it's not successful.
Right, exactly.
Unless you want to be wrong or a liar.
Right.
yeah, I think there's a lot of value in figuring out what you're good at and what you like doing, and then hiring or working with other people to do the other stuff.
Right. But yeah, and it's also like comedy is a skill and organizational stuff is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just, like that's a big thing that I've learned doing comedy is that the more you do it, the better you get. I mean, we all know that.
Right.
So it's the same thing with any skill. It's like you're going to be shitty at the beginning.
Right. So if today I spent an hour and a half reorganizing. I had an Excel spreadsheet of everyone I've ever booked, what show they were on, and how much I paid them, and who I want to book in the future. That was on Excel, and I found out I don't think that would be as effective if it was in Word. So I spent an hour and a half.
Right. Or you could go on the opposite side of the spectrum and like write jokes that don't bomb.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, so you could spend your time doing that, and you get really good at organization, and you have a really organized booking document, or you can just write jokes and not give a fuck.
Yeah. How about we do a thing where you write jokes and then I make an Excel spreadsheet? You know, because we both work on our...
Yeah, so we switch. We have to work on our weaknesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I'm in. Let's do it.
No.
I'm going to text you. I'm serious. We're going to spend an hour doing the opposite.
That's fine. I mean, I already have to do that shit for my...
Yeah.
And I have been more... I have like an entire Google Drive folder for all my travel, and then I have pre-trip, post-trip, all the information about my vehicle. I have my title. I have my bill of sale all itemized.
There you go. Okay, so you're there. That's what I was going to make you do. I was going to say, you do that for an hour, and I'll write jokes for an hour. Who does that? Yeah. Who does that do? Who writes jokes? I just beat myself and crash. All good.
Beat yourself. Have fun.
How long have we been potting for?
Yeah.
I think we've hit like an hour 15.
Oh, okay.
Hour 15. Do you want a final thoughts? Can we end with like a nice compliment to each other? Just a little gas up?
Yeah. You want me to go first?
Do you have one? I have one ready for you if you don't have one ready for me.
You can go first.
Cool. You're set Friday. Crusher, dude.
Oh, thanks, man.
How'd you feel about Wonderland? You absolutely annihilated it.
It was great. My family was there. Their friends were there. And then I have a high school friend who's been coming to a couple of shows, and he brought like six friends. And
yeah.
He said that he said that he didn't tell anybody that he knew me, and all of them said that they really liked me. So
cool. That's awesome. They say they liked you the best.
Yeah,
dude. I think so. Friends always, dude. Anytime you invite someone to a show, a friend or like a family member,
yeah,
they'll come up to you after, be like, "Okay, you were the funniest." And it's like, "Hey, man, they're right behind me."
I know that happens all the time, and
that's not like it's not even how we approach it.
No,
I'm not like I hope you thought I was really good, and I hope you thought they were really good, but I wasn't hoping for a ranking.
Yeah, no, it makes me feel shitty too, because I was thinking, just to divert for a second, I was thinking about that. Do you, so for you, I just want to ask this question. So you, like, out of all of your friends group, right? Everyone you know who's not a comedian, mm-hmm. do they think that you're hilarious and you're going to make it and you're going to become famous?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think every comedian has that group of like high school friends,
right?
Where they're like, you're good at, you're making it, dude. You're right. So funny. I've seen your stuff like on Instagram or whatever. You were so funny. I think all of us have that. Right. And so all of us are delusional and think that we can make it.
Right. You know okay. I mean? There's a good chance of that.
Because all of your high school friends don't know anything about comedy at all.
We've all gassed up for years.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just getting the, yeah.
It's incredible how much the negativity will cancel that out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's actually insane. The craziest takeaway is that everyone we know has that.
Yeah.
And everyone still doubts themselves and hates themselves. It's how much proof do you need, my guy?
Well, I mean, it's a healthy perspective, because you have all of your delusional high school friends that don't know shit about comedy, and they're like, you're going to make it. But you still have that support. And then you also know comedy.
Right.
And you're like,
I'm probably not going to make it. Exactly. I think you're right. But you crushed Friday. I hope you felt good about your set.
Oh, I did. It was very fun.
That's the best I've seen you do in a while.
Thanks.
And not to say your other sets were subpar. You definitely set it in terms of ranking people. Set of the night on the first show at Wonderland. You crushed it. It was hot.
Thanks, man.
I was getting a beer during most of it, but someone else told me it was good.
As far as compliments, you're one of the most motivated and organized and intelligent people that I've had the pleasure of meeting in my entire life.
Thank you.
And you know, we both know each other pretty well, and we know that we deal with doubts and mental illnesses, anxiety, depression, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you come at it at a very respectable way, and whenever you're down, it's like you don't wallow in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it just seems like you're a machine that just continues to go.
Cool, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was nice. I like getting it with a compliment.
Yeah.
You want to both insult Evan now?
Please do. Fuck you, Evan. Your long hair and your beard and your glasses. That's it.
More of a list. Good. I'm glad you made one.
More observation.
Cool. Very cool. The couch doesn't match the rest of the house. That's my insult.
Okay.
But it does match the tapestry right there.
Get a theme.
Ending on conflict. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Follow Dead Room Comedy on Instagram.
Follow Jankum Jonas on TikTok.
Jankum Jones. Follow Elliot A. Weber on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And
my last Instagram.
Check out Wonderland.
Check out our shows. My last Instagram post was January.
You still have, I think I talked to Jeff about this. You still have the, I don't know if you still have it, but the last time I checked, you had the Eventbrite link to
The Fringe.
Dead Inside the Fringe.
Yeah.
For like 8 months.
It's still there.
Yeah. And it's not even a hyperlink. It's just like a copy and pasted link that you can't click on.
Uh-huh.
That's.
I got to hire someone for this show.
You really do.
Evan, thank you. Genuinely.
Thank you, Evan.
You're a phenomenal asset to us as a friend and as a business creator, an opportunity creator in the comedy scene.
I love Dead Room. I love you guys.
Dead Room loves Slaughterhouse.
Good combo. Kind of synonyms, really.
Yes. Dead Room, Slaughterhouse, cross.
The Dead Room would be like, you'd go in the Slaughterhouse and you're like, which one's the Dead Room?
You know? Dead Slaughterhouse Room, it's studios.
Like next to the bathroom. Like the Alive Room's over here. Then there's a dead room and like an in-between room where there's...
Yeah, there's a torture room, a dead room, and a live
There's the room. Alive room, the torture room, and the dead room. So all within Slaughterhouse.
Yeah, just check out their Spotify.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody. We love you.